Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So yesterday afternoon, I went downtown to see the Occupy Wall Street encampment with my own eyes for the first time. I was surprised at a few things. One was how dense it is. Wall-to-wall tents, bumper-to-bumper tents, row houses of tents over what seemed like every square inch of Zuccotti Park. And I heard that later in the day, supplies came in for winterizing the whole experience. Now, since the city isn't allowing generators, I'm not sure what that means, except maybe heavy blankets and sleeping bags. Can you insulate a tent? I'm not sure. But hunkering down for a long haul seems increasingly to be the goal. It certainly did not look like how the park was intended to be used. And it raises a question over the definition of a public space. Maybe the occupiers can't be asked to leave because it's a 24-hour public space. But in a way, it's become a private space, taken over as home for the group of Occupy Wall Street protesters who have set up the tents there. The public cannot use it in the usual sense of, you know, having lunch in a park during the workday or taking a stroll in the business district, the kinds of things it was intended for. It's a little Occupy Wall Street city now. So is Zuccotti Park more of a public space or less of a public space than it was before? Open question. And there was a lot of activity on the sidewalk. On the middle, on the mildest edge of that, a woman sat in a chair knitting with a sign that showed how many days in a row she was there knitting for Occupy. Another guy was acting like a character from a funhouse. You know, as people passed by, he would come out to the middle of the sidewalk to greet you and ask, "Fist bump, bro?" So I gave the guy a fist bump and walked on. Why not? Nice to meet you, too. But there he was, back and forth, from the edges to the middle of the street as somebody went by, back to the edge, out to the middle, fist bump, bro. And at the more hostile edge, at one corner, a guy was telling passersby that they were good Germans for just going about their lives. Not threatening in any way, but not friendly at that spot. So this was not the Continental Congress, at least not as it appeared on one turn around the perimeter of Zuccotti Park. But when they get down to business in their general assemblies, the occupiers downtown and at other encampments around the country are using some elements of formal parliamentary procedure to make their decisions by consensus rather than simple majority rule. And some of it comes from the classic book, Roberts' Rules of Order. As it happens, a new edition of Roberts is out with a historical interpretation from drug dealers on The Wire, fiction, obviously, to Occupy, wherever groups of people have to make decisions and take action, Roberts' Rules of Order figures in with points of order, motions, and chairs who can recognize speakers. There's now an 11th edition of the book in use since 1876, and here's an example of the rules in action back in 1954 during the Army McCarthy hearings.
May I finish my point of order?
Not if you're not a point of order, you can't.
Counsel advises the chair that the senator is engaging in a statement
Mr. Chairman, I'm getting rather sick of being interrupted in the middle of a sentence. Now, Mr. Chairman, do I have the floor now or do I not?
The counsel said it's not a point of order.
Oh, be quiet.
I don't know why they use the word order with respect to that scene, but there it was around the Joe McCarthy days. I'm joined now by one of the lead authors of the new edition of the Roberts Rules of Order, Thomas Balch, a Washington, D.C.-based lobbyist and legislative analyst who has served as parliamentarian of the National Association of Parliamentarians. Welcome to WNYC.
I appreciate the opportunity.
That's very meta. Parliamentarian of the National Association of Parliamentarians.
Well, even parliamentarians need a parliamentarian who essentially is the person who helps the chair apply the rules so that everybody is being given an opportunity to speak and treated democratically.
And listeners, if you have any experiences with Robert's Rules of Order, you think that yourself that you think are airworthy, call up and tell us the story. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or with a question about Robert's rules themselves, 212-433-9692, or you can post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. So who actually uses Robert's Rules of Order? Congress, corporate boards, book clubs?
all sorts of people. And, you know, some people think, well, isn't it odd that you'd have people who are out there defying authority using Robert's Rules of Order? But one of the key points about Robert's Rules is it's designed to allow people democratically to make decisions where the rights of the minority to be heard are protected, where people can put out proposals, they can change those proposals by amendments, they can try to come to decisions in a way that's respectful of the right of everybody to be heard and the general rule to be determined. And you can do that really in just about any sort of a group that has to make decisions.
It's when things get really contentious, like in the Army-McCarthy hearings clip that we heard, that you really need these rules, right?
Well, that's true. In fact, one of the things we say at the beginning of the book is that parliamentary law is the best method yet devised to enable assemblies to decide questions of all sorts of complexities under all kinds of internal climate, ranging from total harmony to hardened or impassioned division of opinion.
The heart of the rules, I think I heard you say, is to make sure that minorities in political contexts get their voices heard, correct?
That is absolutely correct. One of the most important points is that everyone has a right to debate, and unless you have a supermajority of two-thirds of the people who want to limit that, the majority can't limit that, and the majority has to hear them out because they might, through persuasion, through debate, through possible proposal of amendments and so forth, they may change the opinion of the majority.
Are you following the rules of order they're using at Occupy Wall Street and their general assemblies? Is it Roberts?
Well, it's a variety of Roberts, and there are some changes from the standard things, but one of the key points about Roberts is, you know, it allows groups to change the rules. Roberts sets out sort of what you might call default rules, but it says that through things that are called special rules of order, an organization, a group of people, can say, well, you know, we'd like to use these rules, but we'd like to change them a little. And as long as they use the democratic process in changing the rules, they're perfectly free to do that.
And so do you have a certain admiration for, you know, these Occupy encampments trying to reinvent democracy? I don't know if reinvent is too strong a word, but from the ground up, you know, use Robert's Rules of Order and apply it to their particular situation to do something that they think is more democratic than the way the establishment is working?
Well, you know, it's not at all surprising, because one of the things about Roberts, as opposed to, for example, the way that a lot of the laws in that govern nonprofit corporations in states apply, is that they are so emphasize the bottom up. For example, if you've got a board of directors, which you don't have to have, that board has to serve the membership. The membership have the ability to overturn anything that the board may have decided to do. They can call the board to account. And in fact, there's been a real struggle in some state legislatures because a lot of the laws that govern organizations, nonprofit, not-for-profit groups that are really modeled on business corporations, and they give the board enormous amounts of power over the members, and even say, you know, the board can amend the bylaws, which is the governing document that sets out the way that everything is organized in a particular group. So one of the things that a lot of parliamentarians have been pushing to do, and were successful in doing in the District of Columbia just a little while ago, is to get those laws amended so they're more democratic, so they really use parliamentary procedure, and so they recognize the rights of the members and realize that the board serves the members, not the other way around.
And according to an article on Occupy in New York Magazine, the Occupy General Assemblies are tweaking Robert's Rules of Order because they prefer what they see as a less hierarchical system for decision-making. Would you call Robert's Rules of Order hierarchical?
Well, I really wouldn't. It's important to realize that it is a flexible system, and it allows you to decide just how much you want to have, let's say, officers making decisions to the extent you want to delegate authority to them, whether or not you want to have a board. All of that can be decided within the framework of Robert's Rules. But again, I should emphasize, part of Robert's Rules is that as long as you democratically make the decision in accordance with the standard procedure, you can change even those rules themselves to suit your particular group. So in that sense, it really is up to each individual group, whether it's the Occupy Wall Street groups or any other groups from maybe completely opposite political points of view, exactly how they want to structure their particular rules. The key point is that it has to be itself done democratically. It has to be done fairly. It has to respect the general rule while protecting the rights of the minority to debate.
Thomas Balch, my guest on WNYC. One of the authors of the new edition of the Roberts Rules of Order. That New York Magazine article I mentioned also included a link to the scene in The Wire where the drug dealer, Stringer Bell, tries to bring some order to their business. Here's a tidbit.
Chair recognized Slim Charles.
Chair, our people got to stand somewhere, don't it? I mean, all the product in the world don't mean nothing if you're constantly getting your ass whipped for standing on another fool's corner, man.
Right. I don't suppose you know of any drug gangs actually using the Roberts Rules of Order?
Well, it's sure an interesting idea, but I'm not personally acquainted with it, no.
212-433-WNYC. Questions about Roberts Rules, experiences with it in your own life? 212-433-9692. Jeremy in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
So, my father was a psychiatrist, and he listened to people all day and trying to get a word in edgewise at the dining table. Sometimes he would interrupt my mother, which she hated. She hated to be interrupted, and it could cause a real flare-up. So he started using Robert's Rules of Order so he could sort of interrupt her legally, and he would say, point of information. And that was his way of getting into the conversation.
I'm sure she loved when he would shout point of information.
Well,
too.
You know, that's interesting. One of the things we changed in the 11th edition was point of information. And we changed its name to request for information precisely because it was being misused. It's always been a way of asking a question to get some information. But people misunderstood it partly because of the name as to say, oh, this allows you to interrupt to give information. So, at least on the basis of what you're saying, your father really wasn't properly applying Robert's rules because you're not supposed to interrupt unless there's a very strong justified reason to do so. And certainly you're not supposed to use a point of information to interrupt in order to give your own view.
Have you ever heard of families using it before?
Well, we use it a little bit in my own family to try and teach my children how to use parliamentary procedure, but that may be a little unusual.
How many kids do you have?
I have two.
Just two. I was thinking if you were a cheaper by the dozen situation.
Then it could be really useful.
Michael in Riverdale, you're on WNYC. Hi, Michael.
Brian, I'm absolutely thrilled with the clip from The Wire. Thanks so much for sharing that.
You bet.
So here's my question. I'm a professor in a New York university. Our department has Robert's Rules on the books, and we use it to some degree, but it could be so much more effective, both in our use and actually getting buy-in from people. So my question for your guest is, what can we do? We've got it on the books, but we're not using it as well as we can. Where do we start? What's the resource? What's the tool to kind of
Well, the first thing I would suggest is pick up a copy of the very inexpensive Robert's Rules of Order, newly revised in brief, which is unlike the book, which is like a reference manual, Robert's Rules of Order itself. The in-brief book is short. It's written to be easy to understand. It actually covers about 80% of the circumstances that you're going to need, and you can really read the key parts of it in half an hour to an hour and a half. So that gives you sort of the basics and the understanding. You know, it doesn't get into all the esoteric rules that come up infrequently. And then using that, it gives you some guidance on if you want to try and sort of construct your own rules, if you want to modify the rules, first you need to know them, and then if you want to adapt them to what is the best way for your particular group, you can do that.
Raphael in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Raphael.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
My comment was about my experience with Robert's Rules of Order when I was in college at Marlborough College in Vermont, which is kind of a small liberal arts college. And I think it was biweekly. We had a town meeting style whole school assembly where we'd sort of make decisions about allocating certain funds and the rules of our community. So we used Robert's Rules then, and I sort of noticed that I felt the freshmen often and people who were new to the process, their voices were somewhat marginalized, perhaps, or...
In other words, the rules were set up, and we're going to run out of time in a second here, but the rules were set up in such a way that it was easy to marginalize new and experienced people at it?
Essentially, because the vocabulary was kind of complex, I felt like people would come in very excited to participate in this democratic process, but didn't actually...
Then they would get intimidated by the complexity. Yeah, I could see that happening, Thomas.
Well, a lot of people realize if you go to a baseball game, you know what terms like stealing a base mean. It doesn't mean somebody runs out and picks up the base and runs off the field with it. So in any area, there are things that are like terms of art. So it's true. You have to learn a little bit. You have to know what a point of order means. But it's really not any different from learning any sport, like football or baseball. You put a little bit of effort into it, you read a book like Robert's Rules of Order in brief, and you're up and running.
There's one point from Robert's Rules of Order that we're actually going to be talking about later in the show, and that's instant runoff voting, because that's being applied in the San Francisco mayoral election today. So we will get to that later on. But for now, we thank Thomas Balch, one of the authors of the new 11th edition of Robert's Rules of Order. Thank you so much. This has been
Thanks
fascinating.
For having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.